Houston is hot, but the people are cool. You are in Rhonda's Lounge listening to Artist of Houston podcast. Stick around, listen up. It's going to be great.
Welcome, everybody, to the lounge in Rhonda's Lounge today on a beautiful, soon to be sweltering day in Houston. Today I'm going to be talking to Ms. Heike Barkai, who is a visual artist who paints, works as in printmaking, photo performance, drawing, many other aspects of making art, is a teacher, professor of art, and has a fascinating collection of work online that you can peruse and really expand your mind. It's pretty awesome. We're going to have a conversation today about what is going on with Heike. So, welcome. Happy today. Heike Barkai is in the studio in Rhonda's Lounge sitting down to talk to me, and I'm really, really thrilled about the conversation that is about to happen. Hi, Heike.
Hi, Rhonda.
It's very nice of you to come. I know you're busy. You're a mother. You have a lot of things going on, and so I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Great, great. I told you that I like this conversation to be mostly organic and not so contrived. I have had the experience that people have a lot of things to talk about. And when you're talking about your passions and things that you love, it usually comes very easy. So let's get started. I have one standard question that I love to ask people, mostly out of my own morbid curiosity. Since I don't have a complete education. But I'm always curious about people, whether or not they've gone to art school. Did you go to art school? I know this answer, but I want you to tell me.
I did not.
You did not?
Well, I did my MFA, which is, mm-hmm. I guess, an art school in a way, but my education started in the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And mm-hmm. I studied philosophy there.
Are you from Israel?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was my life for a while. And then I did go to a school that is called the Jerusalem Studio School.
Okay.
And there we studied with this painter, Israel Hirschberg.
Okay.
Who basically taught us how to paint in his own image.
Oh, okay.
It was very ideological and kind of like embedded in the politics of Israel's, you know, art scene and how it's connected to ideology. So it was very much against conceptualism, and it was really about just working from observation with a model, you know, from the morning mm-hmm. until the evening, basically, for mm-hmm. 2 years, 3 years, however long he took it. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and that was that he basically taught me how to paint in many ways.
Yeah.
And then I experimented for a couple years by myself. Then I went to do an MFA with Penn State.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Came to the United States. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have an MFA. Nice. That's good. I want an MFA. But I'm not doing anything to get it. I know, it's like all the artwork, you know, I tell people, these paintings don't paint themselves. And those MFAs don't come up just in the mail, right? You got to go work for it. Well, it's a lot of work. So that's awesome. And you've been teaching, I guess. I mean, that's how I met you, as a teacher. Fantastic teacher.
Thank you.
Yes, seriously. You did. You introduced me to a lot of... you're mentioning this Herschel. Is that how you say his name? Your first
Hirschberg.
Name? Hirschberg. And I'm kind of still in that process of even just understanding color. You know what I mean? Just basic stuff.
Yeah.
And you still enlightened me in that way. So I regret that I can't take any more classes with you.
Thanks. Yeah, some of your work I see has a lot, much better use of color.
I'm getting there. Yeah.
I like the one over there with the man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's an experiment. I put that up against the patio door and was painting at home, and it was nothing but light coming through it. So I basically couldn't even see what I was doing.
Maybe that's the key.
Put some blinders on and maybe my work will turn out.
Blind painting.
Yeah. I went to an artist talk that you did last year at University of Houston.
Downtown.
Yeah. I can't remember the title.
Aesthetics as Instruments of Power.
No wonder why I can't remember it. I didn't write it down. Aesthetics as an Instrument of Power. I did make a lot of notes, though. So, I made a lot of notes, and I made a little drawing of you at some point during the day. I guess you went outside. I don't know where I was drawing. Anyway, so you mentioned, I think this is a writer, Judith Butler, who described something called the discomfort as resistance. And it was, I guess it was the beginning of the talk, because you were talking a lot about the body. Mm-hmm. And how to, what's the right way to interpret this? The effects with the body in painting. Anyway, you know, you're over my head, like you're so deep, Hagit, honestly, but I love listening to you. Can you talk a little bit about why you had referenced
Judith Butler?
Yeah.
So for me, like a lot of other people, she basically, Judith Butler changed my life and my view on many things. I think one of the things she did for me originally was she introduced the whole literature of feminist philosophy, even though, you know, she wasn't exactly, she didn't title herself in this particular way, but it was, in fact, arguing with a lot of feminist philosophers. And it was the kind of writing that I was like, yes, this is, it has the same rigor and the same ambition, you know, that I can find in all these classical, beautiful texts of philosophy, but yet it deals with all these weird issues that I'm dealing with and, you know, that I see around. So, so that was the first lure, I guess, in, and then I think she's important also because she was like a bridge for me from philosophy to painting. Because I was actually working on this paper to finish my degree in philosophy, so... Mm-hmm. Hi, train.
Hello, train. Yeah, you're here in the train in New York.
Yeah, I was just finishing my last paper for my philosophy degree so that I can get into an MFA program. And those ideas from there actually carried through, and they're still important to me. So, you know, so there are a lot of things going on there. But the idea of discomfort as resistance, I think, was particularly fruitful because it sends you into creating things and looking at things rather than just destroying or criticizing themes that are problematic. So rather than just understanding, you know, how something is kind of damaging, let's say, that was liberating.
Yeah.
You know, it was, and think about, you know, like considering all your weaknesses and your awkwardness, and suddenly it's
strength.
A sign, you know, yeah, for something stronger, for some better, more important truth that you can find. So.
Right.
So that was, I think, why it stuck with me all these years.
Have you ever heard of this David White? I'm reading this book, Condolences, and he just takes ordinary words and he writes these beautiful little essays. The one that I love, though, is Disappointment, and how people always think that disappointments are bad And it's like, to think about a life without disappointment is not a real life. It's, you know? And I was like, oh, wow, okay. I can embrace a disappointment. So it sounds a little... discomfort as resistance. I think in painting that's extremely pertinent. Hopefully I'm on some trajectory, I don't know, but I've had people say that to me. I'm like, I hate painting, I want to quit, I don't want to be an artist, it's a burden, you know? And they're like, no, you got it. This is where you're going to grow. My duty, oh my god. It's like, no. Good, no. Well, anyway. I've been told, though, that's where the growth occurs. So discomfort as resistance.
I think there are different things that are important about this, I guess, for me. One is just entering into this whole world of difficult things. Mm. So it's not just discomfort. It could be shame. It could be, you know, like even anger and feelings.
Sure.
All these difficult emotions and things that you don't like to see, so ugliness, right?
It's being aware too. Sometimes you get lost in those things. I woke up this morning, I was completely agitated yesterday, everything, and I woke up this morning, I was like, I'm not gonna be agitated today. Like being aware of it was even agitating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard work. But these things, once you're aware that they have a history.
Yeah.
You know, ugliness has a history, and it's connected to racism and sexism. It's connected to like fear of the other and things like that, and to all kinds of values. That's when you're starting looking at, you know, at people, at bodies, at images in a way where I was like, what is the message that these things are sending? Sometimes we're not aware of it, and sometimes it's very deliberate, and you know, people are actually constructing an image to change your mind for something. Obviously, we know.
Sure.
You know, we know about that a lot.
Yeah.
That's I guess a big thing that it does. Forget about the other thing.
Propaganda. This is like, I mean, you're kind of bringing in like propaganda, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, advertisement, but also in a very intimate way, and in a way where you're self-advertising when you look in the mirror about what kind of body you need to project to be okay, to be respected, to be safe, to be like, you know, like to be okay with yourself even.
Yeah.
And so these kinds of images, they're very much, especially images of the body, and above all of these images of the bodies, the body themselves, how we carry ourselves. These things, it looks like impenetrable, like something so minute, and so if you start tracing it, you see values that are kind of embedded in the way that we carry ourselves.
What made you have that discovery, though? I mean, that is... I'm like an animal. I can barely, you know what I'm saying? How do you discover these things and understand yourself in that way, and your work in that way?
Wow, that's like to trace a very long process, I guess.
Right? Yeah. You know, introduce explain to the audience, as much a wonderful painter you are, you're a philosopher, and that your work is... so thoughtful in that way. So,
well, I wouldn't say that I'm a philosopher, because I'm not actually, you know, not spending my time on it. I made a conscious decision to, you know, to choose art over philosophy, and that was meaningful. But I'm definitely shaped by the philosophical writings, and I'm definitely, you know, they affect my work, you know. How do these things happen? I think it starts with some sensibility that you have, that, you know, I had this kind of fascination with people like who's seeing these things. So the first thing is kind of like being able to see and being able to understand what I see tells me about the way people think.
Mm.
You know, if I see someone from far away and you know, and there's something that comes up, like her eyes look like really blue.
Mm.
Like
mm-hmm.
blue in a way where if I see it from that far away, it means there's a lot of makeup over there, right?
Oh, okay.
So that tells me something about how this person, you know, carries themselves, like what they did, let's say, this morning, or mm-hmm. maybe I can speculate about how they see themselves from very far. Of course, it's mostly false, right?
Mm.
But I think the first thing is sensibility, and then some kind of a discomfort that drives me to solve some kind of problem that sometimes you can't even define the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you read because it matters to you, because you're actually hunting for something.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
like,
yeah.
How did, so like I read Judith Butler like very closely and very intensely, but I was very frustrated at the same time because it applied to me in some ways, but not in all ways, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so she talks about queer bodies, and I feel that I have a queer body, but not by her standards and her, mm-hmm. right? And I think all of us feel sometimes that we have queer bodies in some ways, you know? So that, for example, like, you take different things from different texts mm-hmm. and different people, and eventually your mind has to kind of create
gel.
A picture out of that. Yeah.
Make it the Hagit gel. Yeah. Yeah.
The something. The pasted.
Something.
Paradoxical mess.
Yeah. This is very interesting to me because I haven't gelled yet. I'm still working on like drawing and seeing what I want to fully understand, I guess, maybe. I don't know.
You never really truly gel. It's
yeah.
not like...
It's growth. I mean, yeah, I guess.
If you do, you're done.
You did. Yeah.
So, to me, it's not. That's why also I'm interested in teaching, because yes, there's a difference in skill level, but at the end of the game, like what somebody that's just beginning to paint is dealing with, is emotionally, let's say, is not different than what I'm dealing with. And if it is, then there's something wrong.
Mm. Oh, that's good to know. Yeah.
So it's always the same, you know, you're always working on important issues to all of us.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you have a series working right now, something? Okay. When you are thinking this way, or you see someone that you there's something about them that you begin this problem solving, for lack of a better term. Is that the beginning of like a series of paintings, or how would you come up with an idea for creating
a series?
A work, or do you work in a series? Is that correct?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of series, yes. But I think the way it started was not. It's not about how it ends. Let's say it like this. It's more about how can I create myself a process of work? Because, you know, I'm thinking a lot about what I do, so I'm not gonna do all this thinking about this one piece. And mainly because the one piece is never enough to explore something. So it's kind of like describing to myself a process where a painting after painting will kind of reveal something.
Mm-hmm.
And one will send me to the next. And so it needs to be something that I'm interested enough in thinking about and doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big... For me, like, I'm bored easily. It's
yeah,
gotta be, like, intensely interesting.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I understand. I heard someone... Oh, it was this pop song. I was working at the hospital, and this kid had this pop song on, and it sounded good. I was like, oh, so who's singing? And I don't know, somebody I never heard of. And but this is the words. I'm so bored. That's the words. And as a mom, like when I hear the kids say that stuff too, I'd be like furious. Like,
right.
You're not trying hard enough if you're bored with this world. Like, go make something. Go do something. But I understand what you're saying, because I mean, well, painting, it takes so much energy. So when you're going to put energy into something, you need to be turned on by it.
So here's the thing. Boredom could be awesome. Boredom could be awesome and could be really bad. And to me, the painting itself is never boring, I guess.
No.
That's why, you know, I'm doing it. Like, even when I don't know what I'm doing, it's actually negative feelings are more more available
productive
than being bored.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, sometimes you get some good moments, but I'm basically dealing with good and bad. Not so much being bored or uncertainty, you know. But with being bored, it's more about that, you know, like, I guess there are two kinds. One is when it's a good boredom. It's a quiet boredom, and it's kind of a space that allows different things to come in, you know, that were
I just thought about refueling, like, it's a time.
Yeah, maybe boredom is not, it's not always a good word for it, but it can start like boredom, and then you find that you're breathing differently, you know?
Okay.
And things that were hidden start surfacing, and you're like, oh yeah, that does matter to me, and let's, you know. And then there's a bad, I think, boredom where you're super busy. And,
oh, wow, yeah.
And bored.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting.
And that, I think that's what we're suffering from today, like society. I mean,
sure. Like, I mean, there, like, you can't get your face out of your phone, you know? It's like, I'm interested in people's lives I have I'm never going to meet, or, you know? Yeah, that kind of stuff. There are videos offered to me. Videos you might like. Like, someone else is, I don't know. I think it's a real problem. It's strange. Yeah.
It is a real problem.
Yeah.
And it's not so much about the content. It's it could be about the amount of time that we're given certain things, and the fact that we move very quickly from one thing to another.
If you were going to go into your studio and you were gonna just paint anything, like you didn't have any concepts or ideas, could you do that, or would you have to sit and, you know,
think about what I'm gonna Well, I went through things with that, because when I started to paint, I just painted people, and then I had a model always in front of me, and then I had a period of time where it didn't matter what I paint, because I'm only worried about how to paint.
Yeah.
And very slowly, and it always mattered, for sure.
Yeah.
And I always made decisions, or editorial decisions, about how I paint. But it happened kind of slowly that what I want to paint became more and more a question that I was kind of, you know, obsessed with, because, yeah, you come to the studio, what are you going to paint if you can paint? If you're no longer worried that, you know, about whether you can make a painting or not, and you know you can make a painting, now the question is, you know, what should you paint? So I think now...
Do you ask why make the painting?
Why make that particular painting?
Yeah, I mean... Well,
or a painting.
Any painting.
Any painting.
And that's... Yeah.
I don't... I mean... When you think about it, there is, like... You know, I remember talking a lot in school, you know, we have this ideology around painting, and people kind of try to brag about how necessary painting is for them, like they couldn't live without it. I remember those conversations. I won't die without painting. I won't, you know. But I do know that I really love doing it, and I know that it's the kind of pleasure that I owe it to myself almost to, you know, to develop. I mean, I wouldn't get it in another way. I know that it's something unique. It can't be replaced, just for me, you know. And I love ideas, and I love reading and writing, you know. But it's not the same. And I'm not saying that one is more important than the other, because if I don't write anything after a while, I feel like something is wrong as well. So I need both, but I don't need to justify the whole project of painting. I think once I understand that this is something that I need for my life, it's enough as a justification. Now, why should I make this painting and not that painting? Yeah, but you know, I think the major issue in the studio for me is not to criticize. It's a creation, you know, it's like an additional project. So the main effort is about make, and then make more. Mm. And things will reveal themselves.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And they do.
This is, I listen to audible books when I'm in here painting, and I just listen to The War of Art. What's that guy's name? Stephen? Yes, I can't remember it. But that was kind of his message too, which is good because that's where I believe. I'm like, just go in there and just do something. I mean,
well, I mean, I did become more strategic about it. And,
yeah.
You know, I created enough source material that would last me for 10 years if I need to.
Wow, yeah.
Or more, you know,
that's
so
great.
I'm not lacking in source materials.
Awesome, yeah.
And that's important because it's like, I don't have this block.
No.
You know, if I need to create something new, I will create something new. But if I don't need to create a new image, I just want to reflect on how to paint it differently or how it changes when I paint it in this way or in that way, I have enough of a library of images that I know, you know, cover what I'm interested in, you know, over a bunch of years. And yeah, if I need to do something, it's because I have some new passion.
Great. Yeah, that's good. Tell me the name of one series that you felt was really, really either elevated your thinking about painting or for your own portfolio, your own...
The change, one of my series that changed how I'm thinking about painting.
I know you had a show at Redbud Gallery in... You had a show a couple years ago. God, it's been a long time actually, right? At Redbud Gallery, though, that I remember. I always remember all those images. First of all, they were really big paintings. What was the title of that show? Do you?
I think you're talking about a show in Now House.
Yes.
Maybe?
Oh yes, yes.
And that was Resistance.
Resistance. Okay.
It was additional support, maybe, that was here. I mean, in this complex. In Space Taker did that.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
One of the others, maybe.
Okay. Any...
Probably Resistance.
You, yeah. Tell me a little bit about how that came to be, that group of paintings.
That group of paintings was combined of different series, actually.
Okay.
So it was not just one series. It was just, you know, I met Dan Allison, we talked, and it was like a curatorial kind of effort on both of our ends to create something that makes sense as a whole. And it, you know, it had big paintings, it had little
oh,
prints.
Lithographs, or,
it was
not lithograph, etchings.
It was dry points.
Dry points,
yeah.
Oh my God, you can do that too.
Well, that was fun.
You're really classic. You're classically trained.
Well, you know, I'm classically trained, but it's a very narrow training in a sense that I kept training myself after. But the official training that I had was one of many that are classical.
Yeah,
there are different classical trainings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got one ideology of that.
Gotcha. Yeah. I did look at dry point one time, and I was like, I can't do this. This is gonna be
it's
too
fun. And it did. Well, that's a good example of something that changed a lot for me. Because
really?
I worked with Armando Rodriguez.
Yes.
Know?
Yes.
And we worked together on, on printmaking, and he does that with artists. So that's something he loved to do, and I wanted to do printmaking for a while. And so after some time of doing that, what ended up having, and I'm like scratching lines basically. So I'm making an image that is kind of tonal, because that's how I was thinking at the time, with lines, you know, and I'm also putting a lot of effort on making these lines because I scratched them in. And
there's, you can't take them away.
And you can't take them away, but you can gradually work them.
Okay.
So you don't have to immediately put something that you would regret. I don't know.
Sure.
It's interesting. So what happened was that basically line came back into my thinking. And I wasn't thinking line for a long time before that. I was thinking edge, I was thinking spots. And so that was something that once, you know, it was kind of unrelated to my painting in a sense. But then when I painted after doing that for a while, my painting changed. And I started creating these structures that were based on light and not on, let's say, from dark to light, but from light to mass, for example. And it changed, it kind of opened up, you know, my understanding of color and how it works. And I remember thinking that, you know, like I said, like always not feeling connected to Raphael, I'd say.
Okay.
And kind of more connected to Leonardo, like in the beginning of, you know, so kind of went back and was like, oh, you know, I kind of get that now.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try it, give it a shot. Good to try new things. I recently tried sculpture. I've always had the secret desire to do sculpture, but I'm like, no, I'm not going to let myself do anything else. I mean, this place is starting to look like a flea market, right?
Yeah, it's and cool. All these collaborations.
Oh, the collaboration show is really going to be great. I really like that. That's fun, working with clay.
Working with clay is also fun.
Yeah, really fun. Yeah. Well, we could keep this going, but we've already been talking for 30 minutes, my dear.
Okay.
I know. So interesting. Look, I didn't even get to the other pages of my notes that I wrote during your talk. I'm gonna read this one. I'm just gonna read a sentence and see. Let's see what you. Oh, here's a word I didn't even know what it means. Epistemic.
Epistemic.
What does that mean?
It's epistemology is about like how you know, like understanding what justifies knowledge.
Okay.
How are you thinking?
Wow. I wonder if I spelled it correctly. I'm sorry. You teach me a lot. So it's always good to talk to you, and I wish I had actually taken better notes. And
that was fun.
You'll have to give an artist talk here one of these days. Maybe we can arrange that. We started doing that with the people that are in the buildings, which is nice. But definitely would love that.
That'd be fun.
Okay. And I want to thank you again for curating our Women of Winter Street show that we had last January. It was a tremendous success. People are still talking about it and loved it.
Thank you for inviting me. That was a great experience.
Thank you.
I was really happy to see all these artists here.
Yeah. And we had discussed doing studio visits where you sort of curated out of the studio, and perhaps we can do that next time. That'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
How can people find you? Are you on Instagram and all those
I am.
Horrible places that we are addicted to?
I mean, my website, hoggypokai.com, and my Facebook, Instagram, all of them, I'm there by name.
By name. Okay, Barkai.
Yep.
Did I say your name correctly? Barkai.
Well, there's so many pronunciations of my name that I lose track.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, as long as you're not demanding it be pronounced in a particular way, it's all good.
It's all good.
So, all right. Well,
thank
I want to thank you tremendously. Have a great day. hope everyone enjoyed that conversation. I make a lot of jokes about myself, but I just really respect and love Heike for coming in. She's one of these truly evolved, thoughtful people that make me, hopefully pushes me further in my own art pursuits, and hopefully for yourselves as well. You can find her at HeikeBarkai.com, and I mean, basically that's, you can get anybody online, and that's where she is too. So do that, check it out. You can find us at www.artistofhouston.com and on iTunes. We had a fantastic launch party, a lot of fun, a lot of beautiful food by Flora Cucina. Miss E really made me look good. It was awesome. And we will be having a benefit at Boheme through Fresh Arts June 7th, which will benefit the podcast. Every drink you drink is gonna, a percentage will come to support the podcast. And that will be an awesome way for you to do that, especially if you're gonna go ahead and, you know, throw back a few anyway, right? Little vino, little beer, or something, come out June 7th. And remember, we're here every second Saturday, 12 to 5. This particular second Saturday, we are having our come together show opening in Winter Street, and a real and surreal show in the Silos on May 17th. So a lot of things are happening. You should definitely just friend on Facebook Sawyer Yards, and you'll get all the notifications and the events that do occur here, which is pretty cool. So don't get left out, boo. Go ahead and do that. And again, thank you, Hagid. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.